You're listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to fakeologist.com/radio3. To participate in the chat, go to fakeologist.com/audio chat. Each day, we compress and upload the day's chat, be it big or small. Leave a quick message, do a whole show. All are welcome when it's related to fakeology. Now, on with today's audio.
Okay, we're in the live stream. We've got Nightly News and John Le Bon. And we're just having a chat about different things, nothing major, nice, easy, relaxed. The time for me is nearly 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the 7th of the 4th. John will be, I think he's about 6 hours ahead. So I'll put him around about midnight. And Nightly News, I think you're about 10 hours behind, are you? What time is it for you, mate?
Well, 1 a.m.
1 a.m, so I'll tell you, 10 hours ahead, aren't you? There we go. So, yeah, but, yeah, just when you mentioned the Georgia Guidestones there, like I say, that 500 million number, obviously there's lots of different angles people talk about that, out of the 500 million on the planet to start with, who would be called what, you know, is it an idle threat, is it a work of art, is it, you know, I mean, it draws up a thousand questions. But the thing that always gets me is the people that, the artistocrats, for argument's sake, of a better word, the people that run the place, they're not the people that we come into contact with. They're not the people that run the big businesses, I would have said. I would have said their running of the place was done from a distance. Does that make sense? You know, they don't interact. Yeah.
They have a booth.
Yeah, they have a booth. Yeah, they're in a nudie booth looking at us, aren't they? But I always think about this 500 million that you'd want left, you know, on the planet to do your bidding or do whatever. And these people are the people that are already working anyway. You know, these people are already productive people. These are probably the people that are having children, are doing the travelling, are leading what we would call a balanced life, you know. So it always seems more like a student art project, the Georgia Guidestones, but nevertheless, I do like the questions that arise from it.
Yeah.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Those idiots don't even know where we live.
That's good that I like that. I don't think that was the real one, but we'll get a real one at 3 o'clock. So, Nightly News, we've heard you 3 times in less than 24 hours and seen you in Australia. That's like,
yeah.
You end up in 6 hours in 6 times in 2 days. Your breakdown of the shooting. I was listening to your breakdown of the shooting, mate. And, you've gone over it, haven't you?
Yeah. fell into me like that one.
Can I ask you the one thing that stuck out with me, and I can't work it out, and I end up being like Columbo, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's the horn beep. He beeps his horn, but he's hesitant. He don't want to beep it. He just taps it, you know. When the girls are crossing the road.
I didn't really pick up much on that. I was sort of concentrating mostly on the mosque.
I knew people were going to be concentrating on the mosque, so I watched the video. Yeah. I only watched it twice. Like I say, I'm not really into first person games and things like that. So I watched it to see if I got like the violence from it. I didn't get the initial violence from it. I wasn't shocked or anything like that. I did say this to Nick and a few other people, the horn beep, it stayed in my head, and I can't figure out why. So if you do. If you can share that.
Because it seems hesitant.
He doesn't want it. It's almost like he doesn't want it to be heard, but he doesn't mind doing it enough for them. You know what I mean? You know when people beat the horn without making it go, do you know what I mean? That way.
Usually it's something that, you know, intuitively sort of grabs you that you don't understand. Like, you know, for me, it was the way he was going outside all the time. I was going, what's all this about going outside and shooting, you know? Like, it stuck out to me, and I didn't really know why. So, yeah, it's good when when things like that, you know, your intuition, but you back it up with testing and you know, go over it thoroughly.
Yeah.
That's
what we've had thrown down our neck for the past 2 or 3 years now anyway, haven't we? We've had shootings and, you know, it's the first time we've had a one stream live, which was pretty pretty groundbreaking. Do you think the next lot will be like that? Do you think that was a one-off? Is that a fanatic?
I was thinking about it, like the history of the live streaming, at least for me. And I could remember there was the one where the disgruntled employee shot the news team, the cameraman and the you know, the chick. I think it was a chick, you know. And then there was another one where it was like the guy was in the car and he got out and they were African Americans and he got out and shot the old guy, and the old guy held his shopping bag up with the squib in the shopping bag. And they're the only two, you know, I had a feeling there was more, but they were the only two ones that sort of I remember analysing, you know, myself. And they were pretty tame compared to this one. But, you know, all in all, they did a pretty good job, you know, from at least from, you know, the way that I think that they put it together. I know a lot of, like, the people who are focused in on the disappearing cartridges are, like, really zoning in on the you know, camera editing, you know, what you can do with the, you know, what do you call it, CG, computer graphics or whatever, you know, and that could play a role in it. I think, like, I was trying to have a look at the cars driving past, and they sort of didn't seem to line up. It looked to me like, you know, there could be a background, a pre-filmed background of the cars driving past or whatever. But, you know, it's sort of hard to prove. I was just sort of basically trying to focus in on how I could have pulled it off if I, you know, had, I don't have that sort of, you know, background with the squibs or anything like that, but, you know, basically how would you direct it and how could you perform it on the day? That's the thing I was sort of focusing on. Basically, because when I first watched it, I thought, oh, that'd be easy, I could do that. And then the next day when I watched it, I went, oh, actually, it's a little bit trickier. I wasn't so sure that it was, I was going to be able to find the flaws in it. But, you know, the Easter eggs pop up like they leave them in there for you, you know. I don't think they have to make it with mistakes in it.
No, everything will be released so that there's, it's just ambiguous enough to make you, you know, not pay attention. But if there is mistakes, then you can classify it straight away. That's what they're hoping for, aren't they? They're hoping for ambiguity so that you can't classify it, and then they threaten for the people that have got the video on the system, whatever. And then there's the error of threat where they actually don't want, but they want you to be fearful about watching it. I brought it up, didn't I? Because he was talking about it. He said, obviously, you know, there's laws behind having like certain types of pornography on your computer and stuff like. But where would this fall? You know, was this incitement? What would this class be classed as?
Yeah, I don't know. But the only thing I can think of is that you know, blowing a security action or whatever that Andrew Wilkie was saying. You know, if you expose a security operation, that's a crime. And so they could be just saying, you know, if you've got the video and then just because they say, you know, because it's you know, we don't want people showing it for the graphic nature in it, they could still be using the bust of, you know, it being a security operation. And, you know, if they were trying to keep it as a security operation and keep it under wraps, well, then they'd be using whatever, you know, cover story that they wanted. But I noticed that there was
a threat of time, wasn't it? Yeah. 14 years. Because the number itself actually made me, you know, take note. When I heard that number, I thought, where the fuck have they got 14 years in prison from? So it must be what you're mentioning there.
Well, you know what I mean?
If they already know why, because you would be jeopardising something there.
Yeah.
I mean, not gonna say 14 years for someone who's a 12-year-old on the computer.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, isn't it? I mean, you could probably pull off a shooting and get less than 14 years.
I was going to say, yeah. Well, what about Gary McKinnon? He exposed the aliens, man. Remember him? He was another one of these. He broke into NASA with his computer and started downloading stuff to do with aliens and stuff. And yeah, I think it was about 10 or 12 years ago now.
Well, they done him for hacking, did they?
I know what it was. They made a big case out of extradition. Probably nothing happened. You know, it was probably the son of a retiring policeman. And this was, you know, part of his severance package, do this or something. But, nevertheless, it was in the papers for a bit. And it gave some of the shill departments on the internet credence to talk about, you know, like classified files and stuff, which therefore, sure, you know, bumps up your credibility, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm not much of a UFO guy, but, you know, it's not that I avoid it, it's just that, yeah, it's never been a super interest of mine.
After 2000? The aughties, naughties, whatever, I don't know.
Oh, the noughties, yeah. Yeah, well, there's an Area 51 movie coming out this year or something. Somebody was sending me a message with, check this out or whatever, and then, I don't know, they started asking me about, is Area 51 real or some shit like that. I'm like, fuck, I don't know.
Have you guys ever met someone in real life who believes they've been abducted or seen aliens? Like, have you ever spoken to a real life person who believes they've had some contact?
No, I'm hoping
not a third degree. I've had someone hassle me over seeing a UFO.
You know, there's people are out there. Like they're obviously a small fringe group, but they're like any subculture. They hang out together. They go to the same conferences and these kinds of things. And these people, like I've met one or two of them, and they fully believe what they're saying, that they've been contacted. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And they might seem as crazy to me or to you as we seem to normies who believe that the TV tells the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, there's a difference between, you know, you've been abducted or you've seen an alien and I haven't, and like there it all is on the TV. I can show you it. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
If you can, you know, take me to an alien, then I'll be going to meetings as well, I suppose. But, you know, so much of it.
I heard a theory about, you know, because there are these people who believe they've been abducted, they've got memories, all these things.
Yeah.
I heard a theory from someone that makes a bit of sense to me, that what some of these people are experiencing is repressed memories from their birth. Because you think about how the typical child is born today in the Western world. They're born into a weird, sterile environment surrounded by weird-looking people in weird uniforms who generally are covering their nose and mouths, which makes their eyes more prominent. They smell funny. They look funny. And they've got a giant light above them. And if you're born cesarean section, you're actually held up towards a light, which is very similar to a lot of these stories that people have about abduction. It's almost clichéd. This, like that abduction story with the light and all this. Do you know what I mean? That's how common it is.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have this idea that, oh, babies remember their first moments. No, the opposite is true. Those first moments are the most important memories they'll have. And my evidence for that is that there's a correlation between suicide and birth trauma. And not just that, but the type of suicide people commit correlates with the birth trauma they suffered. And now this is a subconscious memory. They're not consciously hanging themselves because they suffered umbilical cord around their neck when they were born. They don't even know. Most people don't even know what happened when they were born. But if you look at longitudinal studies into this, that is looking at the same cohort of children across time, yeah, there's a correlation between birth trauma and suicide, which suggests quite clearly that these early memories stay with us forever. So you think about these people who believe they've been abducted and all this kind of thing. Well, maybe they have, or maybe they're just having like flashbacks to these repressed memories when they were brought into an alien environment, the hospital.
Yeah. Even conception.
Makes more sense than fucking Christopher Walken. No, crazy film.
But you know, like your consciousness.
I'd much rather the damage happen when I was younger rather than worrying about getting probed on the way home. So yeah, I'll have that. I'll go with that. Explains a lot more as well, doesn't it? Because you know, if there were aliens, they would have killed a good few of us by now. There are some annoying people on the planet, and there have been for a while. So you know, why have they just got it in for cows?
For delicacy.
Yeah, yeah, but you see, I've often thought that, you know, you hear about cow mutilations and things like that, and yeah. You know, different talk about the precision instruments used to, you know, extract certain things. It's always like anal, like, what do they call, there's a word, coring, anal coring. Wow. You know what I mean? Because, yeah, it's, yeah, this, you know, it seems like even the UFO and, you know, them crazy paranormal things, now they're pushing the envelope now. You know, we've gone from people seeing lights in the sky to people waking up and having sex, like with demons during the sleep, you know, and things like that.
Yeah. When John was making the link to the birth trauma, that made me think of, you know, all the other links that people make to, you know, sleep. What is it, sleep?
Sleep paralysis,
and you know the similarities between when they think there's a demon sitting on their chest, or you know that being, you know, an alien sitting on their chest, or.
Well, what do they do to babies when they're first born, man? They wrap them up so they can't move. It's called swaddling. Why the hell would you do that? Why would you do that? It's
Sometimes it's just so they can't scratch their own face, because sometimes they're born with really sharp fingernails.
Ooh.
Is that
Hi, I'm Shatimi from Morocco, and you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.
Who's throwing bumpers in here? Is this Trip?
No, that was
one 3 minutes early, then we had one at 15. Yeah, there's new programming going on. I do not fit in with new programming. Yes, baby's first poo. Baby's first poo is made up of all its fur that it loses in the menstrual water, in the waters. So the baby's first poo is made up of its own stuff, and when it comes out, it has sharp fingernails. So there you go.
There you go. But I don't know if that's the solution.
No idea.
If the problem is they've got sharp fingernails, you have to swaddle them. Yeah.
You have to get the 100-mile-an-hour tape out.
You just tape up the tips of the fingers and you'd solve the problem. But get this, right? So what colour do people think aliens are? How do they refer to them? Little?
I only remember the greys, man. But there's supposed to be, what, three main sorts, isn't there?
Well, I'm familiar with those little green men, right? Little green men.
Oh, yeah, right.
People typically wear in hospitals. That spearmint green thing, man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, what's going on.
Yeah.
This is I can't prove it, but this is what I think is going on.
Yeah.
It does make more sense than aliens.
Yeah, well, I mean, the problem with that is that outer space is a hoax. That's your first problem right there. There is no outer space. It's a make-believe myth that people just believe.
Well, that's what I've been saying. That's what we're up to now, right? So they worked out the height of the atmosphere. They worked out they could make dirigibles in the end of the 19th century. So they've taken over that bit of sky that we can't see with the naked eye. They've managed to incorporate satellites and all this different technology that's flying above there. And then by the time they get to the 50s and the 60s, you just push the boat out and say, we're going to land on the moon. It's fucking brilliant, man.
Well, I heard you arguing with our friend Gaia from, where's he? What is he from? Holland, but now he's in South America, I think.
I wasn't arguing.
It sounded like you two were having a bit of a heated, robust disagreement on the topic of the Earth. Because you're both very passionate about it. He's passionate about it being a ball, and you're passionate about it being flat.
He's got a lot invested in the geology behind it, you see, though, isn't he? You know what I mean? Millions of years.
Well, he's a geologist, isn't he? That's the story. He's a geologist. You know, one of my favourite moments in Fakeology history was when he was chatting with Dave J, and Dave J explains to him, you know, if you go down to the river and you get a rock and you put icing and a candle on that rock and call it a cake, you understand that it's still a rock. Do you remember what Guy said in response to that? I'm a geologist.
You know what? Go on. Right. Yes.
I'm a geologist. Man, that is peak Fakeologist, if you ask me.
Well, do you know what's funny about that? He used to be a baker. He used to be a baker, so it's, you know, that's what's even funnier.
Are you serious?
No. I'm serious. He used to be a baker. That's why I always laugh at it.
No,
I never waited.
No, you're just making that up. No way.
Honestly, he was a baker for 8 years. Yeah.
I'm going to ask him next time. Next time I'm in the same room as him, I'm going to ask him. Because if that's the case, that's a whole new little does.
I just thought it was funny. I thought Dave was picking up on that, you see. Just showed you. I'm just going to mute for a sec, lads. I'll be back in maybe 3 minutes.
So, nightly news, man. Congratulations. I hear you've been knighted by the, what is it called now, the Foolish Australian Roundtable. You've been honorarily knighted for your work into the Christchurch shooting. So congratulations.
Yeah, I'm a bit of a celeb over that one.
Suppose I was listening to that, I was just walking around the food area in the little suburb that I'm in, and I heard them talking about, you know, what was it, Exoteric was saying, oh, you know, you should be knighted for all of this, and I found myself thinking, man, like, all jokes aside, hypothetically, what if they did offer to knight you? Not for what you've done or for what I've done. Let's just say you did something that would be good in their books, right? Like, I don't know, you saved a member of the royal family by accident or something, I don't know, and they was dead set going to knight you. Would you accept the knighthood? Like, would you, and any listeners at home, this is a hypothetical to ponder, would you accept the knighthood and everything that comes with it and then sit in front of the queen or the king or whoever it is at that point in time and have them sort of touch the sword on either shoulder? Would you do it? Because, man, that would get you a lot of social status. A lot of social status, man. It means having to talk mouth about a lot of things, obviously. But, man, imagine being able to say, no, man, it's Sir Nightly News, you know what I mean? Like, dude, you'd be known all throughout your town, yeah? Or everyone in your family would know about it. People from the old high school you went to would hear about it. Hey, did you hear that so-and-so got knighted? Holy shit, man. And the only price you'd have to pay is never talk about media fakery again for the rest of your life. Not publicly, anyway. I'd say think about it. I would seriously consider it. I'd say, let me sleep on it. I need to think about this. Sir, knighted. Man, I don't think I've even met a knight, let alone being one, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of one, but I can't think of any, but I've got the feeling that everybody that's been in the news that has been knighted in the past 20 years or so has been like a real pain in the ass, you know, someone you wouldn't want to sit at a dinner table with. Like, didn't they do old Boomtown Rats or whatever his name was? Bob Geldof, hasn't he been knighted? That'd be a deal breaker for me, having to sit next to Bob Geldof. You still in the room, John?
I can still hear you, mate. You've not gone anywhere.
Oh, John's dropped out. But what he was talking about before, like, is zeroing in on the birth trauma, but like, I don't think you get consciousness, you know, at birth. You know, you in the womb, you've got consciousness as well. So the whole trauma, prenatal trauma, and even conception trauma would be a thing in that vein, you know.
Well, and that's one thing. I looked into consciousness a long, long time ago, and I really, really, really enjoyed what you discover from it. But also, you discover different aspects of the brain, which can be attributed just to, you know, dilation of time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So you can be suggested something and then put the suggestion on hold, then recreate it in your brain, then the suggestion makes sense, if you know what I mean, you know, sort of like a retrospective memory. But the fellow I was looking into was called Anthony Peak, and he was talking about deja vu. He's got this book out, and I think it's, I can't remember the exact name of it, but it's to do with the daemon, and the daemon's like it's like you, your spirit guide, but it's you. And he says what it is deja vu. He says, you'll hear deja vu almost like as a warning. So if you're living your life, let's just say your journey's set, so you've already lived your life, you know, basically, the life and death, and it's all one big stream. So as you're living, you'll get to a certain point where you'll need a warning from yourself because you fucked up at that point in the past. So he says that's what deja vu is. And he says when you stop having deja vu, that's because this is the furthest you've got. Does that make sense? And if you know what I mean.
Okay.
So he talks about a few different. His name's Anthony Peake. He's done some good audios. And what was good about him is because it's on the cusp of philosophy, and it's not really, you know, it's using witness statements. You can sort of get a gist of the human side and where it's coming from. So he talks about different stories of people being in certain battles or people being in accidents and knowing to, you know, pull over at the side of the road at a certain amount of time and, you know, knowing to when to, you know, step to the left instead of hitting a mine and things this, and he steps to the left because he heard a voice. So he talks about all this deja vu. But you see, this is what always gets me about these things. There is a sense. We do have a sense about us, right? And with me, I try and equate that sense as to when you're born or when you first start off with your blueprint, your brain. Everybody starts off with the same blueprint. No one starts off with lesser anymore. Everybody starts off with the same. And it's similar to, have you ever seen the film 2001 Space Odyssey?
Yeah.
Well, in that film, Hal, when he's being shut down, he everything gets taken away, gets reversed backwards. So he goes inside the brain, he's reversing things. And the last thing that Hal does is see Daisy, which was one of the first things that they got a computer to do. So yeah. I think the memory that John's talking about there is an instinctual memory. Obviously, the brain can grow after it, you know, and then creates pathways around it and stuff like that. But I do think I do think even if the baby's screaming and spluttering, that it would be aware of figures around it, would be aware of, you know, but like I say, this is more like an imprint memory. You know, not so much, I know I'm looking at three men dressed in masks, do you know what I mean? So when I see people going back to an early memory, I always put it down to something that is a real experience. It makes 10 times more sense than just saying somebody's, you know, hallucinated or you've seen something. Because it's a lot easier just to bring something up from your past into your brain and let that be real, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, than have, like, some, you know, a loose era, you know, episode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but like I say, Anthony Peake there, the daemon, the consciousness, talks about people with petit mal and grand mal seizures, so, you know, they have mild epileptic fits and stuff. And some of them, they have time dilation, and the time slows down. They see water pouring slower. Some of them have seen, like, you know, hummingbirds slow down. And, you know, the weirdest of weirdest things. But and these are also talked about as well in like spiritual books. So, and it's all to do with centering oneself and, you know, and all that. So, you know, definitely. But like I say, with the brain, with me, there must be a basic amount of sensory perception going on, that it's going to pick up something. It's going to pick up awareness of what's in a room and who's holding it. You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
just standard basics, I think.
Well, yeah, well, yeah, I think you have a spatial awareness while you're in the womb, you know? You may not have the language to be able to have that self-talk of what's happening or going on, you know. But I can remember when I, being very young and not being able to talk, but knowing what other people were talking about, you know, like before. I must have been 3 or 4 years old or whatever, but I can remember being frustrated by not being able to say what I wanted to say, even though I understood what everybody in the room was saying, you know. It was like a birthday present that I couldn't put together.
I've never heard that before in my life. That's amazing.
Really?
That's amazing. Wow. I've never heard that.
Yeah, no, I can remember.
Never heard anyone broach it or even think of it.
Yeah, because I had an older brother, and of course, you know, he had the regular Lego blocks, and I had the big spastic ones that, you know, you couldn't build anything, you know, the ones you couldn't swallow. So I was always like, so I was always must have been, you know, throwing a fit because I wanted to play with the no, they're Jamie's blocks or whatever. So like, I must have thrown a fit to get the regular sized Lego blocks, and I could the diagram on the side which shows you that you need one of these blocks, one of those blocks, and one of those blocks. You know, I had the required numbers and types of blocks out, but I couldn't make them fit together to match the picture, and so when I brought the blocks into the table of, you know, my parents and the lady that used to look after me, you know, and they all said, oh, you know, I told you it was too young, you know, that my dad took away the blocks from me. Oh, you know, it's too hard for him. But I was like, I just...
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
And he has a pop pause about playing music. That's that. Wow. That's 30 seconds of ABBA every 30 minutes. What's that? That's 120. Oh, wow. That's 4 minutes. Look. Right, so we could generate a full ABBA album if we talk for 10 days, maybe. Go on then, go for it.
Right. Yeah, so anyway, I do remember that. But another thing that I noticed with these early sort of memories is that, you know, did I embellish them? You know, I remember the you know what happened in a lot of cases, but you know, I found that you know, when I would explain these early stories or early memories that I remembered, that, you know, just the language and the insight into what was happening, you know, has grown throughout the years. You know, obviously when you're 10 years old and you have that memory, your description of that memory is a lot different to when you're like 7 years old explaining it, and you know, you add in, you know, you embellish it, you know, and in that way, it's like, is a memory a real memory, or is it a memory of a memory? You know, that was another thing in consciousness
Do you know one of my first memories, and usually it's a traumatic experience, so you know, we can all agree on that. There was I remember grabbing a pen. And I love drawing, by the way. But I remember grabbing a pen. I must have been about two, and I just grabbed it and I just scribbled on the, I think, I can't remember, it was either to the right or it was to the middle of the page, but it was literally just like nothing. And my brother, who's 12 years old, he went, "What are you doing?" And I went, I looked at him and he went, "Draw something proper." And he just literally just turned the page over and just drew. He just went, "Right, yeah, watch this." And he just drew a crane, which was, you know, a picture that was already there, you know, in a magazine or whatever.
Sure.
He just drew that. So I just watched him draw it. And then after that, I could draw.
All right.
Do you, you know, like just life, just draw what you see.
Yeah.
You know, because I was seeing him do it. It was so matter of fact. But anyway, what you did make me think of there is when we hear about all these different learning abilities with children, you know, at a young age, maybe the frustration obviously is coming there because just one of these things, you know, at an early age, they were do something which made them go the opposite path. You know, not pay attention.
Yeah.
Especially language. You know, if you're unable to gesticulate what you want to say, but nevertheless, you can understand.
Do you remember, like, you know, back when we were young, in the, you know, the narrative was always like, you know, you've only got so much learning, your brain's fixed by the time you're in your 20s, you know, but now there's a whole, you know, plasticity of the brain narrative or whatever, and anyone who wasn't listening out for that and didn't catch it is still working on that old narrative going, "Oh no, once you're in your 20s, you've learnt just about everything you can learn." And, you know, I like to do a crossword to keep active, but, you know, and you're like, "Well, man, fuck. In the late 90s, they were talking about plasticity of the brain, man. Didn't you missed a meeting, dude?" And so they hemmed themselves in with this fucking, you know, shit from the 70s, man. And you catch that a lot, especially with, like, people who, you know, who have some, you know, one of the myriad of mental disorders in that stupid fucking book, you know. They, you know, bipolar and depression are sort of the vanilla ones, you know. There's all fucking kinds of crazy, you know, names that they go for. ADHD, there you go. That was one that was popular a few years. "Oh, no, I'm ADHD." You know, "Oh, right, okay, right." And, you know, they read some book fucking 20 years ago or whatever, and they've defined themselves by this description of what ADHD is.
None of us are medical professionals, by the way, if anyone's listening.
Okay, no.
So if you have an ADHD medication, please stick to your prescribed medication.
But, seek some fucking, you know, updates. Because,
you did see the plasticity being introduced with, and it's going to sound rough, this, with films where, you know, you'd see people coming out of work and they're like, you know, "I'm 42, I'm too old to get a job," and then they'd introduce something. And they did it in another way. Instead of doing plasticity, they'd have the person introducing, like, their old ways. So, you know, it was almost like you'd see someone who's 40 and doing a 20-year-old's job. It was always in the comedy sketches over here. Or, you know, it was one of them things, you know, one of them memes at one point. And I used to look at that, and it never made sense. I never found it funny. The people who watch TV, I don't think they're real people anyway, but you'd see this, like, you know, one of these programs. "So, I know I've been doing this job too long, now I'm going to go into something else." And I used to always think, who's writing these stories? I mean, I could understand, like, you know, having seen lesbians kiss for the first time, or, you know, an aeroplane crashing into a street, or a helicopter, you know, one of these big tragedies. But they'd always have some character. You know what I mean? Divorcee, and he goes to work at the disco and things like that. So, yeah. But the way the brain mends itself is amazing. I'm familiar with brain damage and how the brain does mend itself and the different pathways, whatever you want to call it, but also the clarity that comes with people who have had brain damage. You know, whether it's someone who's been severely brain damaged, you know, at birth, something like that, or whether it's come from, you know, multiple sclerosis. So, you know, one of the different things. I used to visit a couple of different units years ago. And there's always a moment of clarity, which is nice. You know, there's always a moment where there's no inner turmoil, if you know what I mean. You know, where they seem relaxed, and you know, whether it's just someone who's constantly in pain or writhing, and then they, you know, they're looking around for 10 minutes, and you know, there's always something there. It's scary how the brain works. It really is.
Scary, eh? No, yeah. I think it's kind of neat. Like, if you
I run out of words. When I mean scary, what I mean, you know, it takes your breath away.
Yeah. Well, you know, when like we're in this sort of realm in you know, examining fake events and stuff like that, and you know, the possibilities and rabbit holes, red pills, black pills, all that kind of thing. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Do you know what colour my pill is? My pill's blurred. It's blue and red.
Blurred.
There you go. Yeah. but that's what we've been dealt. You know, we were dealt that before the millennium. You know, we all became children of TV, didn't we? Pretty much.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
You know, we can't let it go, even if we're trying to justify watching it, whether it's, you know, pointing out fakery or trying to believe, trying to add something laudable to your life by pointing out the bullshit. You know, we all know what we should do. You know, we all should just turn the gun off. But we don't. Attention deficit. Yeah, I've got two letters left for that. They call it TV, don't we?
Yeah, it was a thing. Video was a big one for me. Like, when I've been thinking back to you know, my programming, you know, my normie programming, I'm thinking, wow, well, I guess I was it was VHSs for me. You know, the DVD revolution sort of, it started to drop off from there, you know, and I find we don't even have a video shop where I live, but they've got one of those little vending machines, and every now and then I'll go have a scratch at that, but very rarely do I ever walk away with one. And if I do, I'll probably just put it on and then start fast forwarding it and just go, oh, this is just rubbish, unwatchable. You know?
Yeah. I think my love of films died in probably the arse end of the '90s. Say 97, sure. 98.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun to go back there, actually, and check out some of those. Actually, I really enjoyed John Le Bon's synchronicity when he was going through.
Who's John Le Bon? Has he got a website?
He's got an ever-growing one. Has he got a voice tonight?
Yeah, I'm listening, mate. You mean the Erased for Wand by the Cardigans? You were talking about a sync, and one of the biggest things I had when I was in Phuket was that song coming on in completely different circumstances, different computers, completely randomly. And I'm not going to bore the listeners by repeating the story, but yeah, that was pretty full on, man. So, like, some people are not interested in sync, and that's cool, but for me, sync is fascinating, and it's related to fakeology.
I use sync as my proof of God. I call God a DJ. Whatever good song comes on the radio, I put it down and say, I just say, buzzing sync, God, whatever you call sync, I call God's a DJ, especially with music. I really do. You can be sat there reading a paper, and a song will come on where it mentions the song in the paper that you read it. You know what I mean? And that's sync. Sure. I just call it God. It's a lot easier.
Or the one where you're singing a song in your head and you're going, yeah, I feel like some music, and you turn the radio on and that song's playing on the radio, eh?
On the chorus that you were singing, yep. But come on, let's say John's rendition of Erase and Rewind.
Never again, what? Mate. I got my just desserts for that. They gave me a good old-fashioned mocking on the Fire podcast a couple of weeks ago, and I deserved it.
So I can't believe old Velocity's right technique and prowess. He didn't put music in the background or make you sound any better. He just gave you the raw...
No, he gave me the cat sound effects, mate. He gave me the scratchy cat sound effects. He went to town on me, mate.
He could have made you sound like Boo Blake.
So, yes, no more singing from me when I've had a few beers, but...
Well, what I was enjoying when I was looking on your website there was the... when you were going through the sync on the Stargate episodes, because I totally missed that. I never watched the Stargate TV series, but when you were going through those episodes there, it was kind of neat to be looking through that TV at that period of time. You know, when you're talking about the plot in the 2010 one.
Yeah, the context for the listeners. So Stargate SG-1, which was a TV series that followed the original film. The original film had Kurt Russell. The TV series had Richard Dean Anderson playing the lead character, the Colonel. Their 100th episode, the 100th episode of Stargate SG-1, aired 3 days after September 11. And that was the end of that half of the season. They took a six-month break. So the 100th episode of Stargate SG-1 went to air on September 14, 2001. Now, in and of itself, who cares? That means nothing. But that is the beginning of what I use to show, well, hold on, look at all of these coincidences that surround Stargate and the event that we call 9/11. And to cut a very long story short, in episode 98, which went to air 11 days before September 11, the plotline, and the episode's called 2001, the plotline follows on from this group of aliens with their alien technology who pretend to be the friends of the humans, and they bring this magical medical technology, but they're actually slowly making the humans go infertile. And that episode follows on from another one called 2010. So 2001 and 2010 are the titles of episodes in Stargate. 2001 went to air a few days before September 11. And in those episodes, the alien technology is being used to make the humans infertile. They think the modern medicine is helping them, but no, they're slowly going infertile. That was the whole agenda all along from this technology. Now, you look at a transducer, you go and look at a transducer for an ultrasound, and you try and tell me where you think that technology comes from. Where do people think this technology comes from exactly? No one ever checks this stuff. And so what I'm suggesting is that Stargate, the TV series, which amazingly had its 100th episode...
I'm listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.
Fakeologist.com, yeah. So the 100th episode goes to air a couple days after September 11. A few days before that, they had an episode about alien technology making humans go infertile. In fact, in that episode, these aliens who pretend to be the humans' friends with their modern technology, their modern medicine... making everybody live longer. That's what everyone believes. Medicine's making us live longer. But actually, no, the medicine is making them infertile. They even specifically cite vaccines. So in the plot line of Stargate, in an episode that went to air just before September 11, the alien technology is modern medicine. Everyone loves it. But it's making people go infertile. And they specifically cite vaccines as one of their techniques for doing this. This is on mainstream TV, man. And the episodes in which this technology exists, they're titled 2001 and 2010. Now, those are the titles of the movie, which Napoleon cited earlier in this call, 2001 A Space Odyssey, which was a Kubrick film and an Arthur C. Clarke book. And then the sequel was called 2010. So the two episodes are given the same titles as Clarke's work on the monolith, or Kubrick's work on the monolith. What was standing across from the Twin Towers on September 11? A black monolith, 55 Church Street, Millennium Hilton. Now, what are the odds of that? Now, if someone comes to me and they say, oh, this is just a coincidence. All right, fine, it's just a coincidence to you, but it's not to me. And if you can't see that people are going infertile, then you're blind. It's freaking obvious, man. So that's what my work was about, Knightley, so I'm glad you enjoyed that, man. That took me a long time to finish that piece. I got it finished yesterday, and I'm pretty proud of it, man. Pretty proud of it.
Yeah, yeah. It was really giving me longings for, you know, pre-2000s TV. Because I went and seen the movie. Yeah, I never watched the series, but, going to the movie, that was a big movie for me to go see, was Stargate at the time. And it was just a series that I missed the start of, you know, I was into other things and it was kind of like, oh, that'd probably be a good series if I watched from the first episode or something, but I never dove into it. So yeah, it was good to see it going through it. It was giving me longings for, I don't know, watching Zinger or something.
My favorite TV show when I was a kid. Target SG-1, yeah. The Simpsons, South Park, my favorite shows. I used to completely believe in outer space. I used to completely believe in aliens. I believed in all of that shit, man. All of it. Big time.
Yeah.
All of it. But it's all fake, man. It's all a hoax. None of it's real. None of it's real at all. The lights in the sky are not solid physical objects that you can go to. And the only person telling you otherwise is the TV. Now, why would you trust the TV? Lending to your behaviour. But most people do, man. Most people believe you can just go and float around forever. You can go out of space and just float around, yeah? What a load of nonsense, man.
It's not just the telly. Remember, there's other people believe it as well. It's a cracking story, and people are falling over it.
You don't believe it, Napoleon. You don't believe this nonsense.
John, I would have been the first on a rocket ship, said this, first put me there to make sure I've got a month's weed, fuck it, just a month flying, I would have done 2 mile an hour floating away, but, you know, but that's stupid, this is the entire plot though, isn't it, you know, this is, you can't talk about the apocalypse, it's an unveiling, but I tell you what, they're taking the time. Because there's no one pointing out the way here. We've just worked out that space is fake. We've worked out that we're on a big spinning ball. Now we're asking ourselves, when did the hustle start? That's, you know, how long have they been damaging us from the moment we're born? Why are they trying to take hold of the birthing process? Why don't they want us to produce anymore? Why are they putting bullshit on telly? Is a million and one questions? If someone just directs their energies to one question each, that'll do.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been wondering whether you bring...
Dean Anderson was MacGyver. Let's just point that out. So when I watched Stargate, I was waiting for him to do some MacGyver shit, and he never did.
It seemed like he'd mellowed out a little bit by the time he got to Stargate.
He's probably at his back by then. It's a bad fall off a Jeep.
Because guys do mellow out as they get older, don't they? Like, I'm only 31, and I feel less... Like, I don't know the word for it, but... You know that energy you have in your 20s? Like, I don't know, energy that you want to go and change things or whatever? Fertility, yeah. I'm probably less fertile than I was in my 20s. But, you know what I'm trying to say? Like, that energy that you have when you're younger, where you want to go out and change things and do things and... These days, man, I just don't really give a shit anymore, you know? Just leave me be. That's all I want. Just leave me be. I'll do my thing. You know, good luck to everybody. I wish everybody well, you know, but I'm not. I just don't have that energy to go and do stuff, you know, for other people, for no reason, you know. Change the world, save people, wake people up. What is this nonsense, man? Leave people be. They're happy. The lemmings are happy, man. The lemmings are happy as shit. I keep trying to explain to people. The lemmings are happy.
Yeah.
They believe
I don't know, man.
That you can go to space and float around, and the news tells them, oh, there's a new remote control robot on Mars. Man, the lemmings love this stuff. They love it.
Reason they love it is because it's an accident, isn't it? The reason, you know, they're trying to separate us, they're trying to separate our brains as many times as they can with religion, science, you know, sexism, you know, whatever it is. And some of these things leave holes. And space is a big hole. People go, all right, we're on a ball. Right, well, let's explore it. You know, people want to be part of the, you know, they want to, I'm not going to say hold hands and sing kumbaya, but you know, if there's a big vast expanse of space, there's going to be a few people on the planet who go, well, let's get across the other side and see what's going on. We know there was missionaries in the past. Not all of them was with it. You know, there's people who are really, really good do-gooders. There's people who travel the world helping, you know, and it's only that same spark of an idea which has encapsulated this, and yet it's all a myth. It's all far-fetched stories, and at best, a twinkling in the sky, which just encapsulated the fucking imagination of some really, really, you know, good writers. But that's all it is, isn't it? It's just an idea.
That's the beauty of Spaceman, is it does allow so many opportunities for good writing. Like Stargate SG-1 is all about outer space, and it's a very well-written show. And I had to go back and watch a few episodes to write that article that Nightly News was referring to. And going back and rewatching it, yeah, this is actually an enjoyable show. Like, outer space, basically, if you believe in outer space, it allows you to believe in alternate realities, basically. All these other worlds, you know, other worlds with other civilizations that are happening concurrent. So ancient history allows people to believe in other worlds that can't be accessed. But outer space allows you to believe in other worlds that, in theory, could be accessed, you know, by astronauts or by breaking through the time barrier, this kind of shit, whatever. It allows people to imagine, like, to fantasize, yeah? So from a writing perspective, from a narrative, from a fiction perspective, it's fantastic. It's terrific, right? And people love stories. So if you try and take away outer space from people, what you're really taking away is all of their beloved stories and fantasies and all this kind of stuff. And humans live for that. Trying to take that away from people is like trying to take away water from fish. The fish wants the water, man. Doesn't matter how toxic you think the water is, that fish prefers water over air. Same with humans. They love stories. They live for them.
Well, yeah, but we've seen the transition of science fiction as well, haven't we? We've seen it go from when they go to a planet and they go, no, we've lived in utopia now for 20,000 million years, blah, blah, blah. And then it gets to the point in the mid-80s. I know Star Trek addressed it a couple of times. But then they'd come across a race where two factions were fighting. And it was over something totally childish, and these would represent, you know, two people on obviously our planet at the time. So
I hate that one.
I know, but you know what I mean. It's always one or the other, in it, and you do see it, and it's never like, you know, they're on. It's, the only time we were on the brink is in, you know, the day the Earth stood still. Or do you remember the what was it called, the Outer Limits episode? When it has a small talent for war. Do you remember that episode?
No.
Basically, I'll tell you this. Basically, what it is so you've got a United Nations building, and then they're all meeting everywhere, and all of a sudden an alien appears. And he says, look, we're going to blow your planet up. You've got a small talent for war. Anyway, someone stands up and says, look, just give us 24 hours. We can change. You know what I mean? Whatever it is you don't like about us, we can change. Anyway, so what happens is the alien disappears, and then you just see him literally getting rid of nuclear weapons, signing peace treaties, doing all this. Then the next day, they're all sat there. They've been up all night. They've got this book out in front of them, done, ready. There's the peace treaty. And the alien appears. And the alien, he's there, and he says, right, go on, then. We were going to get rid of you, but what's changed? So the guy gives him the book. So he's flicking through it. And while he's flicking through it, he starts laughing. And the guy's going, what? No. He says, no, we've travelled the planet. We've travelled all the planets. We put you in and we've been keeping an eye on you. And you're not violent enough. You said you had a small talent for war. We don't need peaceful people. And that's it. The planet gets destroyed. And it's just funny because you just see him scrambling. So that's the only time I've ever seen, you know, one side, you know, be like, like, you know, War of the Worlds, where, you know, they're actually showing the truth. Since then, everything's been propaganda for either one minority or another minority, or emphasising some kind of sexual fucking injustice going on, or some kind of racial injustice going on. I mean, Kirk was the biggest at that one. He didn't care what colour the woman was. He just kissed everyone. Anyway, yeah. Well, you know, if anyone gets a chance to that, The Outer Limits, John... The fella, the main guy from Gremlins 2 is in it. John something. John Shee, something I can't remember. But, yeah, a small talent for war. So, like, you know, science fiction is nothing, but you can't... We can't expand and go anywhere around the world now, because everywhere's got a Coke machine, or they've got their own corrupt parliament, or there's someone tweeting from their life. So there's no mystery, is there? That's all science fiction was. It was just mystery in outer space. And it was good. Let's keep it. And by the way, Stargate ran for about 350 years. More episodes of that. Honestly, I think that started in 1998 and just didn't finish until like three or four years ago. Something like 350 episodes or something.
No, it started again in 2027. We just haven't caught up to it again.
Yeah, so I
hate to interrupt. It's midnight here. I've got to get going. Before I do, though, I would love to get both of your opinions. So it's a fact that there's this thing called the Millennium Hilton, 55 Church Street, giant black monolith across from Ground Zero on September 11th.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? Like, what is your perspective on that? That there is this black monolith across from the Ground Zero. If you were speaking to someone who was open-minded, who was not a complete lemming, what would you say to them? Like, how would you explain to them? I mean, firstly, is this significant to you? And if it is, how would you explain to someone why that building being there is important?
You got
it was never significant to me until you guys brought it up. But I thought that it had netting over it when I noticed that, like, I was trying to figure out whether they'd had put netting over it to save it from getting pommeled on the actual destruction day. That was the only thing that I'd ever found about it until I seen you talking about it. But, yeah, as far as the things that you brought up and or that has come up about it since, I wouldn't try explaining it to anyone, you know. That's I'm flat out trying to explain it to them that it wasn't a 19 hijackers with box cutters, you know. But it is certainly very interesting and made me go get out 2001, and then I sort of wished I hadn't because I'm not a big 2001 fan, but. Yeah, that's about all I can add, John. It's not a real big one for me, but it certainly is significant. It's creepy. And the IBM computer, very creepy, yeah. Napoleon.
Oh, well, it used to be a bigger. It's not a bigger anymore, but it is a bigger in a way. It depends. Remember, things evolve in your mind as you're going on. So, it's a tool, first off. It also represents the dawn of man in 2001 Space Odyssey, which happened on a Tuesday. it's like if you were watching 2001, it's a 3D object. It represents the alchemical, right? When I say alchemical, I'm not talking about no chain or anything like that. I'm talking about the people that run the place. This is like them breaking the... Yeah, here we go.
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. You can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
There you go. There is no spoon. So... The monolith on September 11th, the Millennium Falcon, the Millennium Hotel, whatever it is, Pancake Tuesday, that day, right, was significant. What we see on that day is we see two buildings disappear and that big black monolith there. We also see that in Kubrick's 2001's Space Odyssey. In the film, it represents an idea, a spark. It's meant to be the I forgot the name of the precise term, but it's where a civilization gets like a boost, you know, from an intelligent species. So, in that case, what that was is that was an alchemical journey for people. That had two reasons. In the film, you could say that was a science fiction film marvel. Right, that's fine. That was under the guise of that film, which most of Kubrick's films were. That in itself was an opening to the world, saying in 33 years there's going to be a trick. That's what that was. So that was the start of the trick. The finish of the trick was seeing the building in real life after the crazy apes wake up and wonder where the towers have gone. Do you know what I mean? And all that's left is that building, but that building is in the real world, right? But the trick's no different. It's still just trickery. And the only thing I can say the reason it's there is because on the moon in 2001 Space Odyssey, when they find the monolith, it's very similar to the slurry walls in September the 11th, that day once the buildings have been moved and we all seen down there. But it also represents trick photography, which Kubrick was renowned for, so it wouldn't surprise me at all that they'd had this in the planning so much and Kubrick had that much, and well, sorry, not Kubrick, the people behind it had that much involved in the alchemy of film, that the Millennium Hotel came as a tribute to the magic of TV. So, like a thumbprint of Da Vinci on his paintings, that Millennium Hotel was the in real life, it was the ta-da, it was the trick. But that's over a number of years looking at the Millennium Falcon for what it is, you know.
Yeah.
So I see that as like a real life tribute to TV trickery, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I like it. That's a good interpretation. I'm going to try and make it out of every time I'm on one of these calls, trying to get people's opinions on this. Because for me, that was the one.
You know, if you can polish that up, I'd be grateful. But yeah, you know where I'm coming from, don't you? You know what I mean?
Pretty good off the hip, mate.
Yeah, very good. Most people, when you put them on the spot, it's hard to sort of... These are very difficult topics to talk about, you know? So, yeah. No, that was impressive, Napoleon. That's good. And This is the sink. This is the thing that when I saw it, I was like, no, that can't be real, man. No way. So you look it up. Yeah, there's a black monolith right across from Ground Zero. How does this happen? Then you learn it's 55 Church Street. You learn that in 2001 A Space Odyssey, the film with the black monolith, there's a Hilton Hotel in that as well, and that's Hilton number 5. So you've got Millennium Hilton, and it looks like a black monolith from 2001 A Space Odyssey. Which, by the way, even just the name of the film, 2001 A Space Odyssey? Why would you call it that? And, of course, September 11 was 2001. So you start finding all of this out, and this was the one that, for me, was like, no, there's something going on. And, yeah, I'm surprised more people at Fakeologists don't talk about it. You know, like, how do you explain this stuff? You know? We don't know towers are brought down. And we don't really know how the whole operation was pulled off. We'll probably never know. But we do know there's a black monolith standing right across from the Ground Zero. We know that, don't we?
Yeah.
But it doesn't get much. Yeah. Doesn't get much attention, you know. But anyway, guys, it's midnight, and I've had a very long day. So thank you both for the conversation. Hope you enjoy the rest of your day or evening. And that's good to see, man. How good is this? Fakeologist has come back alive. Honestly, this is fantastic. Because I was a bit worried about this place, but the last few weeks have just been terrific. So thanks to you guys, and thanks to everyone out there who's contributing to these calls. It gives me something to listen to, which is fantastic. And I'm really enjoying it. So thanks to abbafakeologist.com. Thank you to Nightly News. Thank you, Napoleon. You guys have a good day, and I will surely speak to both of you very soon in the future. But I have to go to bed because I'm very tired.
Good on, man.
Good night.
Farewell, my friends. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, very good. I'll fall in with your description there, man. Especially like no one had brought up the bathtub matching the moon scene, or maybe John had in the past. I don't know, but I never picked up them. You know how you're talking about the slurry wall?
Yeah, I remember coming across a picture. Fucking, I think it was calcified lines, but up. But then there were obviously. You see, the funny thing is about pictures. Obviously, pictures worth a thousand words. And I love words, so you're always drawn. And I'm going to be honest with you, pictures speak more. So I tend to speak more in words, and the imagery we get from, the funny thing is I managed to tie in a star now with 2001 as well. So it's not a case of 2001 being a really, really amazing film. It's a case of people copying it for a reason.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Obviously, the filming of 2001 took place up until 1965. It was only the special effects which were done afterwards. So it was like 68. So even before the Twin Towers were, you know, started and done like that, they were actually, Kubrick had already, you know, most of the work was done. So you know, there are discrepancies. It's not. It's it, like, but like I say though, they chose it. They that film was multi-directional. You know, it worked in. It worked for putting Kubrick up there. It worked for sending science fiction into the atmosphere. It made people believe the next, 4 or 5 years of space, because, well, obviously people aren't going to lie to you. It give you a baddie, which was AI. AI tried killing people. You know, the man prevailed. It was a million different stories in one. At the end of it, and at the end of it, you get to have a trip. And you know what I mean? Fall into this yogi, you know, next experience of, you know, what's it, enlightenment. It's exactly the same as what we've experienced on a small scale. It's just like a small scale version of the next 25 years. You know, when it was released up until say 78. So it's a good 10 years there of a summer of love and the hippies and then you had the fighting after it and before, and then it ends with drugs, and it's always the same. Same with Back to the Future. Back to the Future, Russ made me laugh. He said, I don't believe Back to the Future predicts 9/11. I was like, no, it doesn't. And he's like, right, okay. But it predicts fucking the next 25, 30 years of politics and TV and media and, you know, everything else. That's what we are, man. That's what we are. We just love films. You know, but that's definitely what the monolith is. It's not, it's, you know, you don't put a big black hotel next to where you're going to, you know, do one of the biggest TV tricks going, setting off some fireworks and telling everyone the buildings. And do you know what makes me laugh about that? The fact that they show them at the end of it, you know, the big burnt holes in the ground, and they're explaining it with some fucking laser beam.
Well, yeah, I'm sort of in. Like, I'm not a laser beam or direct energy that way. I'm a weirdo with 9/11 because I've got the nuclear fusion going on, and
I'm sure there's some compelling evidence behind it, because most people who believe in anything have got some belief behind it. So that's fine. I'm never going to argue anyone who believes anything. But what about the collapse footage?
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's the only narrative that I've got that fits it hand in glove is a nuclear fusion device set off up at the above the impact point, the you know, alleged impact point, which creates like a little mini sun. There's a really good video. It's too well done. I mean, it's got to be. I don't know who made this film, but it's very well done, and it's called Nuclear Fusion, or 9/11, The Case for Nuclear Fusion.
I'm not going to argue the point there, because I don't believe in nuclear weapons, don't believe in nuclear fusion and all that, but nevertheless, I have no idea what we see that day. I can only say what it looks like to me, you know what I mean? And it does look like a big firework. Now, I don't know if you could cause some kind of trigger to a building that would make it look like a big firework. It's possible.
Yeah, it would be worth watching this film. I mean, like, I'm in on the nuclear hoax for Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that narrative is not a fusion device, but a fission device. Like the big explosion nuclear bomb is a fission weapon. Whereas nuclear fusion is what the sun is supposed to be, where you have nuclear fusion going on. So you don't end up
all I was going to say there, sorry for interrupting. Is any of this energy available? Does this come from the power stations and things like that? Because I think there's a lot to do with them, the power stations and the nuclear. Excuse me.
Absolutely.
The evidence we see behind it now, it's almost like the unveiling of its, you know, its fraud is, it's, I can explain it, it's on purpose. Governments are, saying, right, we're going from nuclear power to this kind of power now to that kind of power. So, like, wouldn't wouldn't there be evidence of this technology nowadays? You know, 20 years later, have we got any evidence of it nowadays?
There appears to be evidence of it at the time, even. The narrative was always, and I remember being told this, like, when I was in school, like a 10-year-old in school, was that, you know, the type of energy that we get power, the type of nuclear energy that we get power from is fission, like the atom bomb, but a controlled version of it. And if we could crack the code that gave us fusion energy, then we really would have like free power without all the nasty radiation and stuff. But the narrative was that you couldn't get, at this stage, you couldn't get the power out of it that it takes to put the power in. You need this extraordinary amount of power to put into it, and you don't get a net return. That was the narrative on nuclear fusion. And so the narrative from 9/11 being a fusion event would indicate that they have far more power out of it than it takes to put into it, and that it's quite possible that the narrative of saying that you can't get a net gain out of it is to save that technology from themselves. But I'll post up the
I'm going to be honest with you. My mind's made up on anything to do with the particles, atoms, pockets of light, any of the hustles that come my way, and I'm I'm closed-minded, but the reason I'm closed-minded is because of the carnies involved in it. You know, I mean, that's what really gets.
Yeah, man. Well, it's all your experiences that you've been. Well, I guess I may be sort of in my own category, because being an electrician, you sort of get a sense for these type of energy exchanges and that, you know, the difference. Just how electricity is generated and stuff like that is as mysterious as the whole.
Well, like I was saying to you at the beginning there, there's always little bits that stick in your mind, and it's always annoyed me. I mean, everyone's talked about CGI planes, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
But now, because I always thought when I seen the towers collapse, I always thought, I've seen that before. You know, I've seen that reaction before. And I couldn't figure out where.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? And that's all it was. But now looking at it, I really do. I see it as.
And I am speaking to you from New Zealand, and I'm telling you that if you want to get the real oil, you need to listen to Fakeologist Radio on fakeologist.com.
You're really the best one yet. That's the best one.
Handing your weapons, guy. I'm unarmed and I'm in New Zealand.
Yeah, we're undented, we're uncensored, we're going for it. Like I say, it was familiar when I seen that reaction. But Judy Wood's explanation, obviously, as long as you don't believe in that, that's a little bit good there, because I don't even think she's pointing towards nukes. She's pointing some sort of directed energy weapon from, you know, from miles away.
Yeah, okay, well, that's interesting to bring up, because I had thought that Judy Wood was behind that nuclear fusion video. But I bought her book thinking I was going to get the nuclear fusion. And what I took from the book was that, if she was onto it, if her original idea was that it was to do with nuclear fusion, that they would have said to her, well, you can't be talking about nuclear reactions and shit like that. So they put her together with that other guy, what's his name?
We've got a question from a 7-year-old Alto, and he says, what news do you think about Tokamak? Now, I take it that's some kind of Australian base where they've been doing things. Soccer Mum.
Oh, where's the question? AMA. What? I'm on the, oh, 9/11 fakery. Okay.
No, it's in live stream chat.
Live stream what, chat. Let me get there.
Yeah, Soccer Mum.
I haven't heard of that just yet, but
well, he's listening live. Maybe he could come in and say hello.
Yeah. Live stream chat. Here we go. Tokamak. Oh, it's a fusion reactor. Okay, so yeah, I please come in and give us a heads up. I don't recognise the name of it, but I've done a little bit of looking around. I actually bought some books on nuclear energy off of eBay in the last week, thinking I should really chase it up. And I was wondering how much attention I was bringing to myself.
Do you ever remember that conspiracy about the rumour, the French fella who predicted where the nuclear explosions were going to be?
No, I missed that one. But, like, originally, nuclear 9/11, I went, what? Yeah, oh, come on. But then there was a side story to that was these mini-nukes that were artillery shell nukes and that they could have... put those in, the narrative was that they put these expired mini nukes in all the vending machines. And I thought, oh, hang on.
Let me ask you this quickly then, right? Is it because what you saw on that day didn't compute that made you look into nukes? Or was it another, was it another factor? Or was it just basically the footage?
No, I think I was just messing around trying to track down the mini nuke narrative, like more on that, and then I found nuclear fusion, a case for nuclear fusion. And then when I watched movie, I went, holy crap, that fits hand in glove. Like, that matches what I am looking at. Like, especially the dust getting sucked back down into the building. And the cover story for that was, oh, well, when the building collapsed, it left a vacuum, but you aren't seeing like a dust vortex from a vacuum. It doesn't make sense. It's getting pulled down into the center of the collapse, and the nuclear fusion reaction is said to create a toroid of gravitational force that matches that. You know, the heavier items are getting expelled through the dust, but the fine dust is getting sucked right down deep into it. And I stared at that footage for days going, it looks like it's in reverse, man. You know, you're thinking that, that dust should be spinning out.
I can explain that, right? Imagine you had a tube, and on the outside, you got a tube, and the inside of you got a weight that gets heated up and sends out a charge that heats the paper on the outside. So once that gets to a certain level, it's going to start heating up the outside. As that falls, or is brought down, it's igniting the stuff on the outside, but it's also pulling in on the inside, because they're both symmetrical. Like you say there, they're both symmetrical. Now, if some sort of electrochemical explosion was going on, that'd go on a lot faster, wouldn't it, if it was nuclear? So that, to me, there implies normal physics. This is what makes me laugh about them buildings. When I see them buildings, now I see them as 40-foot models wrapped in some kind of pyrotechnic stuff that's going to fall apart, with an inside that's hollow, that has like the triggering device that actually, you know, it, as the core's brought down, it just literally decimates the rest of it, and it falls in on itself, because, like I say, the physics are not, they're not real physics. They're small. That's almost like a closed system. You know, the way there's no air around it, there's no, you do you know what I mean? It's perfectly symmetrical, and it's not CGI. But when you were talking about nukes and stuff like that, I just thought, well, had they used the same techniques, you know, nowadays with nuclear explosions? Because I've not looked at any nuclear explosions since the ones that were in the 50s.
Yeah, well, this is the thing, though, is we're not talking about a nuclear explosion in what we normally think of as a nuclear explosion. Do you remember that underground nuclear test? Do you remember seeing like footage of them flying over an underground nuclear test, and it would just like,
and we do see, you see the caverns appear. Just let me say, Alto came straight in there to say hello. So as soon as we asked him,
oh yeah, yeah, yeah,
No, I listened to you talking about that old fusion thing, and I was thinking, the tokamak thing, and wondering if you sort of had any thoughts on it, but, yeah, if no one knows about it, look into it.
I'd like to know about it, if you know some information on it. And like I say, I'm not down with nuclear weapons or anything like that, but, you know, I do like the stories. I do like anybody's explanation for lots of different things.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like another one of those big pinnacle sort of projects like CERN or something, you know? And it's this big, basically like a toroidal fusion reactor, and you can go and find images and stuff about how they basically had to build this toroidal electromagnetic field, but it's got like a sort of twisting geometry, like as you're going around the toroid, if you see what I mean. But a lot of what they're saying about the way it works is that it's very dependent on the internal geometry of the field. And I don't know, I mean, is it just another one of these bullshit, is it like a massive just bullshit project and there's not really anything there and it's just a big, you know, it's just like another NASA op sort of thing.
I've got the image.
I just looked up the imagery. The pictures actually match the information that's in that film. I'll have to post the film. It's a good hour long.
It's got all very like science fictiony sort of, you know, I don't know.
The idea behind it is that to harness the energy, you need that sort of electromagnetic harnessing of it.
Well, don't they need to have the material that's being that's going through this fusion reaction needs to be suspended in this field, because there's so much energy there and there's so much heat that you couldn't contain it in anything else but an electromagnetic field.
Yeah, well, the idea behind it being in the towers is that it's set up at, say, the 75th floor or wherever the start of it happened. And then as it reaches, I don't know if critical mass is the correct terminology, but, you know, as the reaction takes over, it instantly dissolves three floors underneath it, and the reaction starts to drop down. So it covers the whole, what you're seeing of the next floor and the next floor and the next floor and the next floor as they are getting molecularly, turned into this microfine.
I just guessed your conspiracy without knowing it. Look at that. So they've come up with some crazy, wacky, I'm going out on a limb here, to explain why we're showing the pictures we see. Because I've always said there's something pulling that down, the smoke as it falls, and it's almost like, you know, in the nuclear explosion footage we see, or the pictures, it's a screen split. You know, we see the double mushroom cloud, and, you know, it's almost split halfway upwards. So when you see the buildings fall, there's almost a bit of fuckery going on just before, you know, the main layer of explosion. But there is stills of these images where the smoke and the dust is only about 50 foot off the floor, and something like 75% of the building's dust. So the smoke's not even hit the floor yet.
It's not only dust, it's like microfine dust. But the paper being flexible, it doesn't get...
It's as big as the pixels you see on the telly.
Yeah, it is.
Remember, what we're seeing, we can't have that representing reality. We can only try and explain away what we see. And what you said to me there is that some crazy boffin who knows that they were fucking big 40-foot fireworks knows that the inside core, which was fucking igniting it, so that it fell and it fell into its own footprint, so it didn't have to explain why they built two hollow towers in New York with no rubble. It's the perfect explanation for it. Brilliant. Scotty, you've confirmed my theory for me. This is amazing. Do you know I love fakeologist.com? This is top. Every time I watch that, it's almost like these. Do you remember in Superman 2 when the lift falls?
I can't pull that one up.
Lois Lane's underneath it and it's falling down. Now, I know for a fact every one of these films is there to make you think something subliminally, something there. And I've always said it now, why the fuck? Because it's so boring. Lois Lane and falling in a lift. But I've always seen it, I've always gone, Richard Donner. He had something to do with the September 11th, the Twin Towers. He had a superhero doing something at the top of the towers. Yeah, perfect. Right, you've confirmed my theory there. The 40-foot fireworks with a big firestone inside them that sets them off as it falls down. But we'll call it nukes for the rest of this interview from now on.
Yeah, but so think about this. If they're big models, right, if you said to me, oh, can you do this with a big model, like a 30-foot model or whatever, then, or whatever scale it is, you know, you can get all sorts of strange effects with the dust. Just if your model's hollow and you've just got a load of vacuum on the inside of that hollow cavity and then you blow it up, that vacuum's going to pull everything in. You know, all of the smoke that's getting cast out from your little pyrotechnics get pulled back in through this thing as it's burning down. You know, like, there's so many ways to get these. Yeah, there's so many ways to get these effects, though, you know. Like, if I think, oh, how would you do it? If you're looking at
I'm not decrying this. I'm just trying to explain what I see. Because remember, I can't see stuff explained. I just know for a fact that they can trick us with models. They will.
Yeah, I think looking at a lot of this the jet stuff and things, right? All the military vehicles and these jets. I don't know, a lot of it, I look at it and I go, that all looks like scale models as well. A lot of it has the sort of, there's always some...
I've never gone that far, even though we have had instances in the past 24 hours of, you know, model cars being used as real cars on, I think it was a News Today.
Yeah, but I don't think that's not done in a way to try to convince anyone that, you know, that's like openly just showing that, hey, this is a representation of the thing. But is there something more to read into it there, that it's a nudge that, hey, this technique is also being used to portray seemingly real stuff?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, as good as... We've seen it with different, you know, inflatable tanks on battlefields from, you know, different things just appearing, you know, in films and stuff like that, where you go, no, this isn't real. We've seen all these 5-minute YouTube, you know, illusion techniques where a guy walks up and picks up a phone that's actually 4 foot big. So, yeah, but I mean, would the military, why would the American military, surely they'd build everything they could.
If you like this audio and want to support the site in a small or big way, please hit the PayPal donate button on the side of the Fakeologist.com webpage. You can show your support for as little as $1.19 a month by subscription or one-time donation. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, all I was saying there is they'd probably build whatever kind of dysfunctional machine they could, even if it wasn't going to work. When you were talking about miniatures, what would they use them for? You know.
Well, it's all like a sort of part of the show, you know.
No, but yeah, I mean, like specifically, just for events. Is there is it like a moulage? Would it be right? Well, we don't have. We want to get 5 tanks on a hill in the background. We not got the 5 tanks available. Get the 3-foot ones out the back of the Jeep. We'll just line the camera up so it look real. Literally, is that what you mean? It's like a film department attached to the military.
Yeah, basically, yeah. There's footage out there that when I look at it, it just doesn't look. You know, it kind of looks as fake as the Apollo stuff, you know, where it all kind of looks like art. It's all been done with models.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
you know, and then there's a lot of stuff where you're seeing like these development, you know, stuff that you're told is part of the development of certain things. And then you go and look at it, and it's all like these wooden mock-ups and things like that, wooden scale model mock-ups and stuff. And I just kind of think, well, maybe that is, you know, I can see that in the sort of undertaking of that big project, you say, right, we're going to mock this up first, just, you know, we'll build a wooden buck, and then we're going to sort of use that as part of the development of it. But also, at the same time, are they sort of displaying what's really going on in showing that stuff? Like, hey, a lot of this stuff that you think is legit kit, like, yeah, there may be some functional versions of it, but also perhaps a lot of the stuff that's in, like, the common media that you see about these different vehicles, those shots aren't actual real. They're sort of scale models and things.
Yeah, well, no, that makes sense, especially in just on the logistics of things like that, you know.
It's like got anything to do with Elon Musk, I'd say yes.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of smoke and mirrors. That new SpaceX booster thing as well is just like, it just looks like a complete joke.
Yeah. Or the underground tunnel, the vacuum tunnel machine thing, you know, speed bullet train. Vacuum tunnel.
That's got a special name. Come on. That's, yeah, the Hyperloop thing. Yeah.
Hyperloop, there you go. Yeah, that's a wooden mock-up.
Imagine that, and imagine those pipes going all over the place. Someone just shoots one round through that skinny... How thick's the steel going to be? It's like a supersonic wave. It's going to rush through the whole bloody... It's just, like, vacuums doesn't work like that.
Yeah. But, they, you know, they got a wooden mock-up one behind him, and they're saying, oh, you know, the first one's been built or whatever, and you got all these university kids all screaming and carrying on. Yeah, man, that's full on what you're talking about.
Yeah, like that's, well, yeah. That's like the link to the brainwashing, isn't it? Like,
it is. Yeah. So anyway, there's the 9/11truth.org. Case for nuclear fusion. Yeah, if you've got 58 minutes or whatever. Creepy music too, you know, it's so well produced. It's not, you know, I'm thinking like, God, it's got to be CIA or something, you know? Some sort of three-letter agencies knocked it together. But, I've never been able to find out who's actually responsible for it, but it's a pretty, it's, you know, all the other theories, and I've never met anyone that's you know, 100% the same, you know, belief as me in just about anything, really. But, you know, 9/11, I'm doing pretty well if I'm talking to a no-planer, you know. I'm thinking, wow, let's just call it a day there and you know, go have some coffee or something. Because, you know, at some point you're going to diverge off, you know, leave the plantation from my beliefs with it. But that film there is the only thing I've ever seen that fits the, you know, what we're looking at hand in glove, you know.
Yeah, if it's a little
that's like saying that what you think what you're looking at is actually real.
Well, I believe that they were real buildings. The footage, yeah. Well, you know, I've seen some bits pointed out from there. I'm a big fan of September Clues and the September Clues Amendium, which sort of is basically saying, you know, you can't trust what you're looking at. But
definitely. Let me just put this out there, because obviously, what you're saying, people do sell on stuff that doesn't sit right. You know, everyone's seen it, you know, people getting hurt on the news and, you know, injustices in the world, and there's no different. That's just over a prolonged period of time. This is something that you can turn away from. There's that much dissent going on about it. You can pick a side. When you see what it is, really, it's a little bit, it's not cognitive dissonance. It does answer questions. Do you know what I mean? And that's what's good about, like you say, September Clues, media fakery, working out, you're being shown a hustle. But never forget, the people are telling you it's nuclear weapons here and do that. These are all part of the explanation. Until someone stands on YouTube saying these were 38-foot pyrotechnic models, I'm sticking with that. Because no one said that. And that's what they look like.
And the other thing is, if you go back, right, and you watch some of the original videos from the actual day, like that thing that was about recently with the guy that's running around with a camera, you know, doing double takes on things and stuff's coming down and all that stuff, in there, all of the stuff is seeded. You know, they seeded the whole sort of everything that sprung up around the event that's looking into it. All of the things that people came up with for the different explanations is all seeded in all of the original footage on the day. It's like the things are constructs to the extent.
There wasn't one Jew in that footage. There wasn't one Jew. I didn't see any Jews in that footage. Go and have a look, honestly. No, I'm only kidding. Is that good? Yeah, I like that. I'm going to mute that. I love chatting on here. Fakeologist.com. No. I'm just going to mute. I'll be back in a sec.
Roger.
No, I just think it anyway, because I was doing some work, and I just heard you talking about the whole fusion thing, and I thought, yeah.
No, that's good. That was a good lead, actually. I'm interested in that. Tokamak. Because, yeah, I did a little bit of, scratching around that video, the case for nuclear fusion, enough to find out that, you know, it is an actual thing that, you know, they are supposedly working on it, but it is a nearly viable. But it appears to be like a project that they sort of like, you know, keep coming up with excuses for why that, you know.
It's the same as most of the space stuff, you know. It's like a never, never. And it's all this big promise, and it's all this sort of just over the horizon, chasing it, and you're chasing it and chasing it, and people are spending billions on it, like whole governments, or apparent governments spending billions on it, and no one ever really gets there, you know, and it's been that way for probably 50-odd years.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't reflect progress in the sense that sort of most other industries do, with that much money and that much, you know, that sort of number of people working on things and stuff like that. Stuff tends to develop or get somewhere.
Yeah, but go on.
I was just agreeing wholeheartedly there. We've got all these companies in the world. Every country's set up like a company, and none of these companies are set up that succeed. Every one of them fucking just hemorrhages money.
Yeah.
But they're all telling you, don't worry, just give us 5 more years, you know.
That's fucking brilliant. It's the wand, the fucking big wand, the big black and white wand. Jim Fett's the jester. Oh, God. Yes. Go on, carry on with the new fishing thing, because I am interested, because, like I say, I'm not too clever on how things work, but I've got a funny feeling that there is a way of getting wacky explosions from, you know, chemicals. So, you know, I'm up for any kind of discussion today with that. So is this fella backed anything up with his videos, or is he able to show any, like, you know, practical experiments and things like that?
Well, they essentially...
Going over the footage from September 11th, basically.
Oh.
No. This video that I've got up here at the moment, it goes into the actual, theory behind nuclear fusion, as opposed to fission. It's not the explosion that we're used to seeing. It's what the sun is. You know, they say there is, you have an example of a nuclear fusion reaction that you can see on any clear day, and it shows a picture of the sun. That's always been the story behind what the sun is a nuclear fusion reaction. I can remember being taught that as a, you know, in a 10-year-old, whether or not that's true or not, but that's always been the story.
Do you think that's what it is?
Yeah, I haven't got a better explanation. I watch the sun on Space Weather News and, you know, sort of track these sunspots that come around.
Do you do any direct observation of it?
No, I would like to, but I have seen, like when I was checking out solar cameras, like Thunderfoot YouTube channel bought, expensive, you know, camera and was showing the images that he was getting off the sun, and you know, they look similar to the ones that we're getting off. But I do really want to just get a, you know, a telescope and because that's all you need is a telescope in a dark room, and you can do the basic sort of Galileo sunspot observation.
Yeah, yeah.
If a good sunspot cluster came around, like one is supposed to be coming around right now, if you set up the telescope and could match the imagery that you're seeing on Space Weather News with a sunspot cluster through a telescope observation, then that's enough, you know, that's verification enough for me.
Well, it's verification that they're showing a realistic depiction of observable phenomena.
Yeah, yeah, but I will say that the effects, in as much as the earthquake upticks match what they're depicting and the reaction that they're depicting, that's another whole, kettle of fish, though.
The guy that's doing all the predictions based on sort of sunspot observations. No?
It's a
YouTube guy doing a load of seismic predictions based on some sort of observation.
Yeah, it's like Space Weather, the Electric Universe. It's not a theory, but it's a set of measurements that you know, you can see they call them blood echo maps. So that these earthquakes turn up where the blood echoes are. So you can actually get in there and be a part of it by monitoring the blood echo maps. And, calling predictions on what really. But just from looking at the you have live earthquake maps, that are unrelated to this guy's channel. They're just I'd pull one of those up on my
just like raw data from the stations, different seismic stations.
Yeah. So these channels that you, there's quite a few different ones of them, which will tell you where the earthquakes are going off. How deep they are.
You listen to Fakeologist Radio at fakeologist.com.
Yeah, and it's interesting to see these clusters, come up. And so when you're watching Space Weather News or Oppenheimer Ranch Project or whatever, and, they're talking about a sunspot cluster coming around or, an Earth-facing coronal mass ejection, you can go wow, okay, we've got 3 days and we might start seeing an uptick in earthquakes, and lo and behold, you see the evidence on the earthquake map.
So,
so you've got CME, coronal mass ejection, then you've got E=MC², and then you've got chemicals, and everything's fucking chem, and it all comes from the top, and it's magic, and the green tablets,
okay.
And yeah, sod the pyramids, sod Egypt. Do you know what? I bet that's a man-made fucking desert so that you can't measure how fucking far away the fucking sky is. Some are daft. Sod them all. They're all fucking daft, these fucking masons. There's something going on, though, if there's people coming up with, pretend particles, you know, because, I mean, they worked out loads at the beginning of the 20th century, and then within, like, 25 years, they identified them, harnessed them, using them for power, and then before you know it, every fucking car in America's got fins on it. Do you know what I mean? It's too fucking perfect. It's too fucking perfect to be true, and all of a sudden now we've... It's almost like if you could depict a rocket leaving Earth, and like I put on the other day, Once Upon a Time Man, the beginning, you see, you know, man's progression. If you could fucking predict or fucking, I don't know, picturize man's progression, it is literally like someone blowing up something in a shed and sending them to the moon and landing on the moon in a spacesuit. It's that far-fetched. Do you know what I mean? And yet it's explained away with neutrons and atoms and, you know, implosions and lots of weird things. I mean, some of the experiments Sean's put up are amazing, and these experiments which shouldn't have been done, these are two professional men doing experiments, and they might be trying to harness the power of banana skin or something, and yet these are meant to be learning figures. And it's not even funny, is it? You know, when you get down to it, I only found out the other day helium comes from Uranus. Helium comes from Uranus. Once I found that out, I worked out that obviously that's false. So now we've worked out gravity is just helium pulling the firmament up, and that's pulling the rest of the ground up. So helium causes gravity. Do you know what I mean? It's that. Am I joking? But no. No, it is bollocks. You can't invent something. They did it with dinosaurs. Well, we invented dinosaurs, and then there's a big mad rush of fucking bones. And it's like these bones are fossilized. They're made out of stone. They just look like bones. Fuck off. And the same with atoms. We've harnessed these. We're going to go to the moon. Well, show us a picture. No, we're not showing you pictures, man. You can have this grainy footage, you know. No, don't second guess the president. He was shot in the head, remember? You fucking brilliant. And then the main protagonist from the fucking biggest science fiction film in the world, he stood watching the Twin Towers fall, stood there, big monolith. What was that president, what was that speech JFK did? Fuck it, a monolithic conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy, it was stood there. I'm surprised he didn't put a smoking gun in its hand. It's, yeah, that's America. It fucking one big TV screen. And we invented the science for it, unfortunately. They all did that here. All the neutrons and atoms and all that stuff, all the magic was done over here at Hogwarts. And then we put on one of them silver planes, sent it over to use. The Nazis got their hands into it and fucking made it, you know, legible for TV. You know, real romantic.
Yeah, actually, I've seen some good Nazi TV, actually.
You know what my favourite is? Do you remember the cartoon from The Rocketeer? In the film, The Rocketeer.
Oh, I bought that recently.
In the film Rocketeer by Joe Dante, 1991. And by the way, if anyone's really into the Rocketeer, Doc Savage invented the rocket pack that the Rocketeer used. So there you go. If there's any nerds out there, they just come in the pants. But in that it says the Nazi Supermen, and you see these Nazis in the fucking helmets with the rockets on the back, all flying. It's fucking brilliant. I love propaganda. Nothing wrong with it, but yeah, they snazz things up. You didn't got to admit it. I don't think it's any mistake that all the cars got better in America once the Nazis got there. You know, I'm surprised they didn't a Chevy paperclip or something. But yeah, fucking. And remember, there's no borders. This is just all the German schools closed down, so we got the best and the brightest that were posh and part of the aristocracy. That's all it is. And the dad's simple, innit? Warmer. And anyway, everything was got a film. It's almost like they were digitizing it. It's like, no, we're not doing practical experiments anymore. We're going to film it all. So, Hollywood. Anyway, that's Napoleon Wilson's history. I better stop there. I'm thinking this up a hole.
It's quite a mouthful. Yeah, well, I work with electricity, so it's all. I mean, and that is, electricity is as weird to me today as any of the stuff that we're talking about. You know, but even though I've spent 20 years plus, working with it, you know, you can't see it. It's not something that I sit there and pull out the formulas that we learned at TAFE College. The whole thing at TAFE College was kind of queer. It didn't really give you an idea of it. They used examples of, you know, pipes and plumbing and water flowing through pipes as an analogue to electricity flowing through wires. You know, it doesn't really work like that. But it works.
Well, that's the lingo they use, don't they? Current flow. You know, so yeah, explain.
Yeah, absolutely. They put a basic simple electrical circuit of a battery and I think they'd even start off with just a wire and then they would have a picture of a pipe underneath it. And then they would have a tap there and they'd say, well, this is a switch, you know, and it works like a tap on your pipe there. And they would build on that, you know, they'd give you a something that you're familiar with, which is, you know, a hose, you know, water coming out of a hose and sort of build up an understanding. Well, you know, they tried to build it up with me. I didn't do very well at college, you know, to begin with. And I was really looking forward to it. And I was like, you know, I'd been working as an electrician or an apprentice electrician for over a year, wondering about, you know, what electricity even was. And when we got to college, I thought, this isn't really, there's a whole lot of trigonometry and some fucking allusions to water going through pipes. This doesn't really tell me what electricity is or anything. It was like years afterwards that I sort of stumbled across these sort of, you know, atomic models of you know, how electricity actually is supposed to work, and whether or not they are true, the map fits the territory. You know, that's the deal with it. It may not actually be a representation of it, but it's a much better representation than water flowing through a pipe. And so, yeah, like nuclear fusion is a step up off of that. For me, it sort of it resounded, you know, it rung true. I understand it. It added to my worldview that I'd already been working on. But I understand if, you know, that other people.
Like I said right at the beginning, my understanding of the world is, like I said, it's based on pictures of us and artists. You know, it's always, it's not a disclaimer, but that's literally my view is based, you know, and that's, I always say the same to most people. And I said it to you because I've heard you talk that many times. You do, I was having a big conversation. And, I suppose if you think about it, you could say there's a similar result in a psychologist seeing someone who's traumatized and someone who knows a person who's traumatized and say, no, it's this event. And the psychologist, managing to identify, you know, another event, you know, in the other person's life. That's probably could be just as important. So, you know, at the end of the day, the one thing I'm going to say there is, visual evidence in this media world that we live in and scientific evidence, a lot of people base more faith in scientific evidence rather than visual evidence anyway. So definitely I can see why someone who's into electronics and is, is compelled to look into things like that and has got an understanding of it, why you'd go down that scenario. Do you know what I mean? It's perfect. It's perfect for someone who's, who was intrigued, you know what I mean? Especially with the electric universe and how you're tying, you know, the lights up there flickering and, you know, things like that as well. So I can see why it's a natural progression.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm a big one for multiple realities as well. So, you know, like my reality doesn't cancel out somebody else's reality either. You know, I was quite interested in you know, simulation reality, how that might work or whatever. Came off thinking, well, you know, reality could be an illusion, but it's a pretty good one, you know. It really seems real, so, yeah. But, yeah, anyway, even if you're, even if it doesn't seem to be a possibility to you, I would recommend watching that case for nuclear fusion, as it, it's a pretty good film of what you're seeing, you know, even if it isn't what the real thing is, it's like, wow, that's a pretty good story.
Oh, well, yeah, Sean's all over it. Let's have a look. Go on, what does that say? There we go, Al O's in there anyway. You read it, Al, so you've got a much refined speaking voice, better than mine. Just read SMJ's comment there, because, like I said, I've got a frog in my throat. I've had it for about an hour now, for some reason, as soon as I got on the microphone.
Okay, he says, Tokamak is the Russian hustle that gave us the pretty blue light at the bottom of nuclear reactors called, what was it, Chernikov radiation. Thing is, bubble cavitation gives us free blue lights, Tambien, of course. John Le Bon, you checked out Alfred Loomis and bubble cavitation yet? And that's like the, you know, the, what do you call it, sonar luminescence, I think. You know, there's a parallel there with that as well, where playing certain frequencies into water causes cavitation, and that gives off light. And, you know, you've got some people that are saying that, people that are on the sort of firmament side of things, that are saying that the stars are, you know, like a result and outcome of solar luminescence in a...
Well, the moon makes a noise. Don't get that. Makes a noise. Yeah, full moon makes a noise.
I mean, maybe it does.
Fucking amazing. Yes, solar luminescence. I've seen the experiments for that. I've seen the frequency. I've seen the graphic equalizer going on. I've never seen it in person. But nevertheless, I have seen it, and it does look like water up until I started seeing people doing CGI on a spaceship, and now I don't even believe my eyes anymore. But I do know how frequencies can move stuff, because I know about kinematics or cymatics, and, you know, and watched all the wacky videos.
It's in all the cathedrals and everything else, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So we know that the resonance is literally, you know, the
all that
is real. Yes, definitely. So,
and yeah, sort of. There's a lot of what's the saying that, like, architecture is the handwriting of the civilization, something like that. And it's like,
okay,
I don't know. Like, a lot of stuff is just symbolically in architecture everywhere, and it kind of this. That's why all of that stuff's in the cathedrals and stuff. That's why you have all these triptychs and architecture and things, and all of this other, I don't know, maybe all of the, there's the potential for all the atmospheric electricity stuff and buildings being sort of...
You're listening to another hour of Fakeologist Audio Chat on Fakeologist.com.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
JohnLeBon.com. That's where it says. There you go. Freddy, that bumper is mad, isn't it? It's like going into a new room. It just wipes your memory.
Yeah. But, yeah, I was just saying that the whole, you know, all the cymatic stuff, all the stuff with sort of all these people making claims about the atmospheric, sort of something being scavenged from the atmosphere, and that a lot of the buildings are built to sort of harness this energy and all this other stuff, like, maybe all of that is all to do with the whole resonances and things like that, and that there's certain ways to harness them, and also a lot of these little sort of deceptions that are going on, they're using this sort of knowledge of, like, manipulation of different resonances to trick people, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder, about the... you know, the 5G hullabaloo.
Yeah.
You know, and how, you know, this sort of radiation may, you know, be used to channel or whatever. But I did see a good show on Al Jazeera that is kind of linked to that in it was like sound energy being used as a weapon. It was kind of cute. How it grabbed me was the guy from Sesame Street who wrote all the groovy Sesame Street songs found out that they were using his music to torture, you know, Muslims in Guantanamo Bay and that, you know, and he was like, wow, how can you use my music to torture, you know? So he went down that path of trying to discover how that could be and how they actually do it and all that sort of stuff. And at the end of it, you know, I think it was like 2012 or something. It's quite an old film. At the end of it, they were talking about, you know, how they've got these sort of directional speakers that they can use as crowd clearance, you know, weapons or whatever.
Yeah.
That, you know, the next generation ones are going to be even groovier, you know, like...
There's like all the voice to skull shit and stuff like that that you...
It's
real or anything, but, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it's real either, but I know that they were using it as, like, they could heat up your skin by, or, you know, at least these were the sensations, the claims that these people were making. And they were making these people move. Like, their reactions didn't seem like your average, you know, crisis actor type of thing. It did actually, you know, although I haven't seen one in action, I find it believable that they have directional audio weaponry, you know?
Yeah, whether or not they can... directional microwave.
Yeah.
That's quite legit. If you want, you can go and make your own, you know, take a microwave apart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to think all these names were like Magnetron. I used to think all these were made up things from comics. Didn't realize they were real things.
Yeah, that must be so right.
And then you find out. You know, you find out what you can do in the real world. And I'm not talking about making bombs, because, you know, when he's like Chris has always said in Hoaxbusters, for, gasoline's 14%, 14 times more explosive than dynamite. So I'm sure if there's anyone out there, you know, who's got the capabilities of making a bomb, I'm sure they're not going to have to mix two fucking chemicals together. There's one ready-made where you get your chocolate, take a barrel with you, you know what I mean? But no, the names of all these different things, I didn't realise, oh yeah, that does that, this does that. You're going, all right. You know, you say, you know, literally you've got the capabilities there to, you know, make yourself a little Terminator. You know, a little machine there, if anyone comes near it, not only does it make them feel nauseous, if they touch it, they get electrocuted and most of the keys in the pocket stick to it. It's brilliant.
That's it. The dogs ran away from it.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Some of the toys we had growing up that were amazing. Do you remember the tracks? You could program it and it'd go, walk in a little line. Little thing, you press 8 forwards, so it'd go 8 foot forwards, and you could type it in, it'd go left and right. And I used to always get to my mates, and I'd say, oh, give us a go. It was only about 7, and I'd just program it, and it'd go out the room, down the corridor, and then straight down the stairs, and fall over.
No, I missed that one. I had the one where you had the cable ties stuck in the back of the toy car, and you'd rip the cable tie out, and the wheel would spin, and then, you know, crash up the heavy. And then they smash into each other and the little plastic bits fly off of it and you can't find them and parents hand them.
My evil Knievel toy was like that. He used to wind the handle and he could hear the wheel going inside it. But he used to have this little I used to have this little small bike and it was my favourite, but I had a habit of chewing the teeth key. You know, that you push through it. It was chewed at one end, so when he used to pull it, he used to jerk. I remember that. You see, these are some of my traumatic memories coming through there.
Yeah, I seem to remember an Evel Knievel version.
In a toy shop. Sorry? Yeah, my first one went straight out the door and got run over. So there you go. Main toy broken Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Damn. See?
Yeah, that's traumatic.
Yeah, the original Shakespeare's comedy, mate. Yeah. There's nothing all the bullshit. See, Shakespeare. Everything sold everything.
Yeah.
You see, I've done my bond spin on everything. I don't call it all a hoax. I just call it bullshit. You know, hoax is a powerful word. You can't be calling things a hoax unless you're going to define the word hoax and not use the dictionary. The dictionary is clearly wrong.
Yeah, well, one of the narratives about the guy who's supposed to be the actual Shakespeare, that Francis Bacon, he was supposed to have been the one that translated the Bible into English. Baconism is another whole rabbit hole.
Yeah.
There could be a lot of old cobblers too, couldn't there?
You think there'd be some kind of safeguard for allowing stuff to carry on through, you know? And obviously, you're just going to change names and places to protect the innocent. So, you know, there must be a lot of stuff like, because you couldn't have the ancient text not matching up with the normal ones nowadays, you know, over a good 500 year period. You know, you'd have to have something. You'd have to have, even if it was just a case of, like, you know, when the thesaurus gets your words wrong and it gives you three words and you pick the wrong one, it doesn't sound, you know, right at all. You know what I mean? I love you from the bottom of my fucking cardio pump or whatever. But so you know, they're going to be some sort of safeguard where it comes through. But language changes, people. People forget to use the words, the fashions come in, you know, people invade each other. So the fact that there's one still going from 300 years ago that people are still abiding by, that's, yeah, you can pretty much say that's the one now. You know, that's the main version. You know, whether it's true or not or whatever, that's the one we're sticking with. Yeah.
I don't know. But they could be, Mandarin could be the big one in another 100 years. I'll be back in a sec. I'm going to take a pit stop, man.
All right, mate. I'm going to find a song.
But yeah, that is another Francis Bacon rabbit hole, is the development of the English language.
Yeah, a load of words come in. We're all in a pickle. You know, whatever the words are that they've brought in. There's nothing different there. People were, you know, the literature was getting published more. People were. Before they were lapping up books from all over the place, which we've seen, it carried on only up until computers. You know, people still buy novels and hardback. You know, it's the way we are. Using words, but everybody likes to be trendy. I can see it being not only a novelty, maybe, you know, knocking your IQ a few levels up. I can see how everything took off. Do you know what I mean? I don't see, you know, when you say, oh, he invented all these words, I can see that, how that happened, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it might have
just been sort of taking the language away from from
apparently a lot of the stories were Italian and stuff like that, so there was a lot more of their words that explained different things, you know, different nuances and maybe different, you know, predicaments, menage a trois, grudges between certain family members, you know, and all these things were described in different ways. So if you were familiar with a certain amount of languages, then to translate into English, you would have to invent words. Do you know what I mean? It makes sense. It really does.
Then you have people who are isolated from mainland Europe because they speak this new English or whatever.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, like, because, you know, when the Normans come over, the courtly language was French, so... You know, which made for a pretty good Monty Python segment years later.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've incorporated it into one of the Blackadder episodes. I think it was Robbie Coltrane is putting together a dictionary, and it's like, I think it's Blackadder.
That was great.
And he just comes up with two words, doesn't he? You know, Blackadder, just to take the piss. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's just like, you know, confabularities. And it's like, he's like, what? they're just common words around here, sir. And he's like, so he's scrambling to get them in a book. And, yeah. Could you,
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah. But it's not a choice.
Where is the dictionary? It's on the fire.
Yeah.
On the fire? Yeah, the hot orangey thing under the stony mantelpiece.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Drop me phone. Concert. Earphones gone all over the shop. What time is it there, mate?
No, I got 3:15. We're about to have another bumper.
Jesus Christ, what are you like? Right, well, I'm going to disappear for a bit, but if you're still floating around in a bit, I'll come back and talk to you.
Sure, man. I'll watch me fusion movie.
Speak to you soon, pal.
Righto.
I'll put a bit on, but like I said, when it gets to neutrons, I might put a bit of disco on in the background.
That's all, folks.